1,2,3
Yeah, man, not feeling too bad, but dude, this cold was brutal. I was pretty much feeling like crap for almost a week. So I had it, I kind of caught it last Friday, and I only started to feel a bit better by the Friday after. Wow. And then Saturday, I felt maybe 85%, but still, I have like sore throat, runny nose, but my body feels good now. And it wasn't COVID, because we bought one of those, what they call pathogen tests. Do you know what those pathogen you can get from like the drugstore? And they just you just like measure your saliva, and then it tells you whether you're positive or negative in pretty much like 10 minutes. It's really quick. So I did two of those just to make sure. And they came out negative. So the first day I didn't do anything. I didn't get tested. And my wife was like, make sure you wear a mask indoors. And I had to sleep in the living room by myself, trying to isolate away from her. Cause, you know, she was worried that, you know, through her work of, if I did have COVID, she'd have to tell her, you know, all the people that she works with, that she is in close contact with someone, and then she'd probably have to isolate as well and stay home. I think that's how it works, isn't it? If you're in close contact with anyone.
Mm.
So yeah, just had that. And then finally got tested, and then she kind of eased up a little bit, but still she didn't want to, you know, catch my cold. So she stayed away from me, made sure I wore a mask the whole time, sanitized everything I touched. So I was carrying around like an alcohol bottle with a cloth, and she gave me some plastic gloves to wear around the house. So everything I touched, she just kind of made sure that I sanitized those things.
Did she used to do all that, like when you just would catch like a cold in the past?
No, this is like the first time because of Corona. She's just up to, you know, kind of what is it? Hysteria levels. Because obviously, it'd affect her life too, not just me.
Right.
But it's good because, you know, I'm on spring break now, got 2 months off. So it was kind of good timing in a way. I didn't have to work or anything. But yeah, it's annoying being sick. And it was just a regular cold, man. I don't know if it was COVID, if it would have been any worse. But then I actually found out a couple of days ago that my family in England, my sister, she contracted COVID. She went to a wedding, got it there. But she said she doesn't feel too bad. She had a runny nose and a sore throat, and that was it. So my cold sounded way worse than hers.
Huh. Yeah. You didn't have a fever? Did you have a fever and stuff?
No, I didn't have a fever. I was like feverish like every now and then, but kept measuring my temperature, and it was stayed the same the whole time. Kind of lost my sense of taste a little bit, or just things, you know, didn't taste as good as they normally did.
Isn't that just because you have like a stuffy nose?
Really? Yeah. So it's just like a regular cold, right? Just normal symptoms. But yeah, missed that whole week of snowboarding, which would have been good. They had a lot of snow that weekend. Dude, what about you, man? You must have been shoveling a shit ton of snow.
Well, for the past 2 weeks, different locations. I've been shoveling a bunch of snow, but man, I actually made it out snowboarding, so I feel like a champion.
Where'd you go?
Rusutsu for like awesome. 2 hours.
Nice. gotta get those legs going, right?
Yeah, I mean, we were out in Toya, and like John was out there. John's been on the podcast before. We actually bumped into Aaron, who's been on the podcast before too, while we were out there. But yeah, just went over there with the family. Like my wife hung out with the kids in one of the resorts for a little while and played while I just like went on the mountain for like 2 hours. But I mean, the snow was like nothing gray. It was all chopped up and everything. There was a little bit of powder like left over a couple places, you know, just where people hadn't passed through just barely with their board or something, maybe like a patch of powder or something, you know? But I was just so happy to be out on the mountain and snowboarding again, man.
Good, man. Yeah, because it's been about a week since it's kind of snowed, isn't it? Like there was like a big snowfall last weekend. So yeah. I think the Monday would have been really good, but pretty much during the whole week, not much.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if we're, I mean, I'm hoping we'll get like at least another dump or two, but I'm kind of wondering, man, we might be coming up to spring pretty soon.
It kind of felt like spring the other day. Yeah, just kind of driving around town or being outside. It was, you know, 0 degrees, but it was bluebird. And zero is kind of warm, I think, for the daytime when the sun's out. And it feels quite springy at that time. And I was just like saying to my wife, yeah, it feels like the winter's over. But she was like, no, this is, you know, there's still going to be a lot more snow to come. She's
just
she's
faking us out.
Yeah.
Well, it's, I mean, yeah, like, so what do we have? Like a couple weeks ago, it was like, I don't know, some people were saying the most snow Sapporo had in like 20 years. Some people were saying ever on one day, record fall in some areas or something. But that was just nuts, man, how much snow we got, like all of a sudden. I mean, it had like had blizzards in other parts of Hokkaido here and there. And then Sapporo just got slammed with that like one day where it was like, what, over a meter or something?
Oh, dude, they had, yeah, it was like in 24 hours, the most snow that Sapporo has ever had in since records began.
Right.
I think over that weekend. And then, yeah, looking at the snow reports for one of our local mountains, it said like 40 centimeters of fresh snow on the Monday. And that was when I was like sick. I was like, shit. And I'm sure my buddies went, they all invited me to go. I was like, I can't, I gotta bury down a hatchet, try and get better.
Yeah. Well, I was like driving back into Sapporo that day. And again, like that blizzard that hit Sapporo didn't hit like other parts. And I think I was coming back from Furano and like, because of the blizzard weather, like couldn't drive, the navigation was saying like the freeways and highways were closed. It was like taking us on a back road but there's like tons of other cars with us. So I was like, oh, everyone's like, navigation must be putting them to the same place. And then all of a sudden, like we just started driving like on this, it was like a dirt road, I thought. And like, it was like getting really bumpy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but this must be like a regular road because there's like all these other cars with me as well. But, and then I was like super bumpy. And then like I hit some like big bumps and I was like, man, should I be going this fast? But everybody else is going this fast. It was like, I mean, it must be like a road that people normally drive this fast on. So it must be okay to go this fast. And eventually I just realized it was like ice and snow that had like frozen from just that huge dump in one day in Sapporo. And then I got back to Sapporo and like, all these people were out in the streets, like shoveling and everything. And then, of course, like JR got shut down for 3 or 4 days after that. People couldn't come to the office. All the trains were stopped and everything. So,
man, that is the first time since I've definitely been in Japan, my 15 years, that the JR all trains canceled for like 2 days.
Yeah.
Because they had to dig out the train tracks and by hand. So, yeah. They, you know, they didn't have these machines, or I think they had the machines, but they couldn't use them in certain parts of the track. So they had to just get out staff with shovels trying to dig out these train tracks. And they showed it on the news and it was crazy. It's like, man, that's going to take them not just one day. It's going to take them a week or something. But yeah, they managed to do it. And I think in about 2 days to finally get some trains going, not all of them, but a lot of them.
And this is like Hokkaido, Sapporo, that's like, you know, model city for dealing with snow, like in the world and stuff. And it was like the whole place was just like shut down and affected for a huge chunk of time and stuff. So,
yeah. I had to dig our car out, maybe twice in that one day. So I kind of waited until the snow settled a little bit. But when I looked out the window, all day there were people digging their cars out. You know, they'd go back in, take a break, come back out again, and you know, kids were getting involved as well. It was quite a merry atmosphere, actually, just everyone, you know, kind of knuckling down together and digging their cars out.
Yeah, just shocked at how much snow had fallen and everything. Yeah, so yeah. I think everyone was
like, let's go some of this.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. So so we had like a break because we kind of normally take a break from recording every now and then. And then you got sick. And so, yeah, I even got like a message. Who sent me a message? Like Matt sent me a message. He's on the podcast a lot. And he was like, do you guys stop the podcast or something? You're not recording anymore. I haven't noticed any new episodes for a while. And yeah, but it's just because different things came up and everything. It was no plans to quit or whatever. But,
right. It's been a couple of weeks, I guess, since we've released. Yeah. Sorry about that, listeners. We were going to record last week, but my voice was pretty much non-existent. So I apologize, Burke. Burke could have gone solo, but
it chickened out. No,
it's hard talking to yourself, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I kind of thought about it, but then I was like, oh, to be honest, like I'm really swamped too. So maybe just because we kind of like we're gonna push back recording. And it was fine. It's just like let's record next week or something. So
yeah, I think it was good that we did leave it till today, because yeah, even we try to keep delaying, my voice wasn't really getting any better, so yeah, we finally nipped it on the bud and we're just like, yeah, let's just record next week, and here we are, we're back. I apologize if my voice sounds a little bit off, listeners, or maybe it sounds better, maybe huskier. Maybe I sound more like Burke. A little confused.
That's right, man. All it takes is a little bit of a COVID cold to make you sound like this. I don't know if that's good or bad, but yeah, but we've been getting like a lot of emails, like topic suggestions and stuff, trying to get to some of those. Like some people want to hear about policing in Japan. Mm. And some people want to hear about like good snowboarding or like ski resorts in Japan, how they compare with overseas. I thought we could talk about that sometime. That'd be pretty fun and interesting. Oh,
for sure, man. Especially like, you know, winter season and all that. We'll hopefully get another friend on who's a shredder and then talk more about, yeah, snowboarding, where to go, what it's like.
Can't talk about some of the local favorites, unfortunately.
No, we're not going to name any of them. But no, we'll just talk about
the major resorts and stuff.
Yeah, the popular ones, where everyone goes.
Yeah,
maybe we'll drop some hints.
I don't know. But one thing that I kind of meant to bring up maybe on one of the earlier times where we didn't have a chance to record, but there was a huge piece of Sapporo news that, especially for both you and me, this is big news. Famous landmark in Sapporo has already closed down at the end of January. Downtown, right smack down Sapporo. Ben, any idea of what this historic landmark that has significance for both you and me is?
I think I have an idea. What day did it close?
Last day of January, January 31st.
Oh, it's not Yonpla, is it?
Oh, it is Yonpla, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I heard it was going to close soon. But it's done.
Yeah, it closed. Down. Yeah, and it like shocked me. I think I would have gone in there to like, you know, try and draw back on some of my earliest memories of coming to Japan. That was my first work location in Japan, yours as well.
Me
different
too.
Periods yeah. and stuff. Yeah. But if I had known, and I was actually in there at one point in January, just kind of walking through, but if I knew it was be my last opportunity, I would have taken the time, maybe even tried to maybe visit the old English conversation school that we both worked at there. But yeah, everything's getting rebuilt in the city. Yonpla was very old. Ben, any idea how old? Oh, so Yonpla is Yonchime Plaza. It's right down in what used to be the center of shopping and everything in downtown Sapporo.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Sapporo's version of what's that crossway in Tokyo, the Shinjuku cross section.
No, I'm talking about the Shibuya crossing.
Right? Yeah, the Shibuya one. So that's Shibuya like kind crossing, of yeah. Our version is where Yonpla is.
Which well,
is
it a, used a to lot be smaller. Yeah, well, it definitely used to be kind of Yonchume Plaza is this like building right there. There's like what else is in there? There's like
Parco, Starbucks.
Yeah. And right in that intersection. And back in the day when Yonchume Plaza first opened, it was like the biggest center for fashion, especially clothing and everything. All the newest trends were going in there. Ben, any idea how old Yonchume Plaza was or is?
Wow. Oh, that's
the building itself.
The actual building. I want to say 30 years.
Man, that's pretty strict on the aging buildings. 50 years.
50 years.
Wow. This had reached that infamous landstone for concrete buildings in Japan, 50 years old. back in its, so it was built or finished in 1971 in September. In its heyday during the bubble, it was bringing in about $125 million in sales per year, dollars. But in 2003, JR Tower near Sapporo Station was finished, and kind of all of the center of shopping started to shift a little bit. And then coronavirus happened. So before they were making about $125 million per year in sales, all the stores were, Ben, in 2020, how much do you think they were making in sales per year at Yonchime Plaza?
How much in sales? Heyday, the whole building?
Heyday was $125 million per year.
Heyday was $125 million per year. And you're asking me how much are they making just before they closed?
Yeah, 2020, coronavirus is going on. Shopping had already kind of shifted a lot of it towards the kind of one new center that's being developed in Sapporo now is up around the station.
So I guess it's gone down then. So it must be like, what, 50 mil a year?
That's pretty close. That's pretty close. It's down to 40 million. So yeah, about one third, less than one third.
What are they doing to that building? Are they transferring it to something else?
That's like a good question. Well, that's a great question. They haven't decided yet, but everything down there is kind of, you know, being modernized and updated. There's that kind of tower building going in there that we were kind of talking about sometimes in the old Don Quixote location and stuff. And I just saw like a plan of the new Lafayette building that's being rebuilt down in Siskino. Used to be Robinson's way back in the day, across the street from McDonald's. And that place is like, they're building everything basically look like Tokyo. Whenever they rebuild it, now in Sapporo, and a lot of stuff being rebuilt like that. So yeah, Yonchibe Plaza was just super dated. And they're saying they still don't know what they're going to do with the land or the building yet, but something that will definitely, you know, be one of these new centers of everyone's attention is what they're aiming for. Do you know how much that land, interesting point, that land there at Yonchibe Plaza is the second most expensive land per tsubo in Hokkaido, actually. Wow. And guess how much it is per tsubo. you know, like everyone talks about Kuchan, Niseko property and everything. You know, possible bubble that's been going on there for however many years now. So per tsubo there is usually like 100,000 yen or 300,000, 500,000 maybe, or something, 400,000, 300,000.
How big is a tsubo? Like a meter square?
3.3 meters square.
3.3 meters square.
Yeah, that's so if like
second.
Yeah, so if like Kuchan and stuff, everyone is always talking about like Hokkaido real estate and everything, one of the big new booming areas. And that's like 1,000, 2,000 per tsubo. How much do you think?
So it's cheaper than Kuchan.
No, that's the thing. Everyone kind of talks about everything that's on everyone's mind is like Kuchan real estate and everything.
Yeah.
And that's like but Yonchime Plaza land is the second most expensive in all of Hokkaido.
All of Hokkaido. All right. Yeah. Is it, I don't know, man, 200,000 a tsubo?
So like double Kuchan?
Yeah.
It is 5.2 million per tsubo. So about $50,000. Yeah. So everyone talks about Kuchan being $1,000, $2,000 per tsubo or something. This is $50,000 per tsubo.
Damn, man.
But most expensive property in all of Japan, down in Ginza, how much do you think that is per tsubo?
Oh, shit. Man, I reckon that's got to be about five times more than the Hokkaido one.
Did you know that family travel has the incredible power to shape our children's worldview and create lasting memories? In a world where representation is often lacking, it's essential for our children to see themselves reflected in every aspect of life, including the stories we tell about travel. Introducing the Travel of Legacy podcast, where we're rewriting the script by celebrating the diverse voices of Black and Brown family travelers. Each episode of Travel of Legacy is a testament to the enriching power and the joy of exploration in Black and Brown communities. So journey with us and subscribe now.
So this is the Yamano Music Building in Tokyo's Ginza District. And in 2021, it was the highest price point for commercial land in Japan. So this was 53.6 million per square meter. So that is 10 times. Well, let's see. But this is per square meter. So what do we got to do?
Divide it by three.
About. Yeah. So what is 53.6 divided by three? About.
A lot.
53.6? It's about 18 million per tubos. So the other one is five. So yeah, it's over three times more expensive.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, if your Chome Plaza's going, then I wouldn't be surprised if Parco is probably going to go in a not too distant future. And then what's next? Mitsukoshi.
Well, they're saying they're rebuilding Pibo, which is right next door to Yonjima. It's going to remain Pibo, but they're going to rebuild that.
Oh, okay. So just like renovating in a way.
Yeah, but everything basically needs to get redone is what the whole thinking is and stuff. So, but yeah, I mean, goodbye Yonjima Plaza. Goodbye all those great memories.
Yeah, yeah.
First time coming to Japan, yeah.
I guess they have to because of, you know, earthquakes and natural disasters and stuff, right?
Well, that's the thing. That was what they, in 2017, they deemed that if there was going to be like a 6 or 7 on the Richter scale earthquake in Sapporo, that place had a high possibility of collapsing. Mm. And everyone knows we've had a couple sick, well, not a couple, but what was the one in Tohoku? That was like 6 or 7 or something. So.
Yeah, yeah. And the one in 2018 was like, was it 4 or something? 4 or 5?
4 or 5, yeah. So could be around the corner. So, but that was like back in 2017. I was like, you guys kind of waited about 6 years or 4 years to
all those meetings.
Get on the ball. Yeah,
yeah. Stamping those hankos.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, that was for both of us, it was kind of big.
Yeah, yeah. It just kind of brings back memories of when I used to go to the 9th floor when I was working at Yonchome Plaza, and the 9th floor was where all the staff used to go for like lunch and hanging out, smoking cigarettes and stuff, like the whole building staff, which was pretty cool because all the shops are basically just filled with women's clothes and accessories, so it was all just hot ladies up there just chilling out lunch, and I just go in and get my bento box and sit in the middle, just like stare at people for an hour.
Recharge.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Remember why you're so happy to be in Japan.
Yeah, yeah. And then a lot of people didn't know about that place, actually. I kind of just wandered up just the flights of stairs and just saw a lot of hot girls going into this one room. I was like, what's going on in here?
So he's watching.
Just followed them, yeah. It's probably the ladies' toilet, I didn't realize.
We were lucky it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So today we're talking about some food. Food is on the mind.
Yeah, Japanese. Well, you know, food is always big news in Japan. It's always on TV all the time. But I don't know if you've been following this the major developments in the McDonald's French fries saga. Burke, did you know this was kind of a big deal that was happening since December last year? McDonald's Japan suspended their fries, the sales of medium and large size fries for 1 week back in December.
Yeah, I just kind of saw it popping up on the news here and there, but I wasn't paying too much attention to it because I actually went to McDonald's during that period. And whenever I go to McDonald's, I usually order like one of the traditional great meals. And then I also order like a side of potatoes because when I get a set, I get like the chicken nuggets as part of the set. And then I order like a side of French fries, but I was just ordering a small, so I didn't realize this. What exactly was the drama?
Well, they suspended their sales of medium and large size fries between 24th of December and 30th of December, so you could only buy S size fries because of the pandemic. Japan McDonald's, they get their fries from America imported, and they had issues at the borders, especially the Canadian border, where they get their fries flown in from. There was severe damage as well due to severe flooding in Vancouver. So yeah, that disrupted a lot of the routes for McDonald's potatoes.
So it wasn't just all supply chain issues that's kind of affecting everything these days, causing inflation to skyrocket and whatnot, but some flooding as well.
Yeah. But the thing is, they, you know, they were suspending the different sizes, like M and L size, but you could still buy as many small portions as you wanted. But if you bought like a set meal, which usually comes with M size fries, they give you S, and then a 50 yen off was their thing. And I don't know if it's like the same in other countries, but French fries are so popular in Japan. It's like a lot of people just go there just to eat French fries and nuggets and just chill out for like hours or do homework or whatever. So that happened like in December, and it was supposed to go on for 1 week, but because the pandemic wasn't calming down or anything, it carried on. So then it carried on in January, a lot of other kind of burger restaurants heard about what was happening to McDonald's. Some rivals, for example, Freshness Burger. So they decided to boost their fry sizes by 25% to compete with McDonald's, and they did this for free. So they actually were given more French fries, and they could do this because they weren't getting their potatoes from America. They were getting theirs from somewhere in Europe. Yeah, so they had a better supply chain.
Oh, really? And I thought some places even were getting from domestically.
Oh,
right?
Sorry. So Freshness Burger was actually from Hokkaido. Mm. Yeah, so they were getting theirs domestically. It was a konbini that they, in January 17th, a konbini. Actually, we don't have this convenience store in Hokkaido, but it's... what's it called? Mini Stop. So I think they have it in other parts of Japan, definitely in Tokyo. So they also got involved in the old French fry war, and they started selling buckets of French fries that were 300% larger in their convenience stores. And yeah, these guys were getting their potatoes from Europe. So their supply chain was a bit better than the McDonald's ones.
Everyone was trying to cancel McDonald's.
Yeah, yeah. Just a whole war going on. And then it finally ended February 4th of this month. McDonald's announces end of French fry rationing in Japan.
Uh-oh.
So they're back. Yeah, they can now start selling all their regular size French fries. And there's a lot of happy people. Yeah, so there was a lot of commenters on Japanese Twitter saying, potato power, our potatoes have returned. Can't wait to stuff myself with McDonald's fries again. So, yeah, a lot of happy people. And there's, I mean, once I kind of delved into one article, just all these other articles just get coming up on my Google feed and Facebook and YouTube. I could have gone real deep, man, and it started going to like hash browns. Started to disappear from McDonald's as well.
Oh, really?
And then Moss Burger was rationing their fries too. And it was a bit too much. I couldn't focus on, I only just wanted to focus on McDonald's in the end. So I could have gone a lot deeper. Maybe could have gone a whole couple of hour episodes on just McDonald's French fries or the French fries Japan war. But, just stuck with this one.
What do you normally order when you go to McDonald's?
Well, actually, I don't go McDonald's anymore. I don't go to McDonald's anymore.
I kind of stopped. You said that. Yeah.
Yeah, I stopped about, I want to say, 3 or 4 years ago, just for health reasons. You know, like the food is really bad. I mean, it tastes great, but it's not good for you. But the last time I went was actually quite recently. I went for breakfast. For some reason, I think breakfast is okay because it comes with a coffee. I don't know. But yeah, I had an Egg McMuffin sandwich and it comes with a hash brown. Those hash browns are lethal, man. If you eat those too fast, you just get you know, heartburn and you feel you're going to have a heart attack or something. but that was like the last time I had McDonald's. And that was the first time in about 3 or 4 years. And yeah, the only reason why I did that, I got to the station to go to work just a little bit too early and didn't really have anywhere to hang around. But McDonald's is always a good place to go if you've got time to kill. So yeah, I had to buy a breakfast there. So just did that. And but usually when I used to eat McDonald's, I always went for the Big Mac meal. Yeah, always.
Here in Japan, you're talking about?
Everywhere, any McDonald's, doesn't matter where. Big Mac pretty much tastes the same, I think, wherever you go. But obviously, you know, McDonald's in Japan, they have their different menus, as a lot of McDonald's around the world have their unique burgers and things like that. What do you go for, Burke, when you go to McDonald's?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, just like you're saying, they have like some of their unique menu items only for Japan. Like there's like, I think they're just for Japan, like the Samurai Burger and some of these other things that are going on right now. I don't go there that often, maybe like 2 or 3 times a week or something. no, just kidding. But that being said, I did talk to somebody recently who does go about that often, this foreign guy. And he was like, because I was like, I think I saw you in McDonald's the other day. And he was like, yeah, you probably did see me because as sad as this sounds, I go there like 2 or 3 times a week. I'm like, man, are you okay, you know, health-wise? But I don't order, because when I go to McDonald's, I like to order like the classic menu items, like a double cheeseburger meal or just like you, like a Big Mac meal, just because like it tastes so good. I think I've talked about this before, like McDonald's in Japan kind of reminds me of like what McDonald's tasted like when I was like a kid growing up in the U.S. because I feel like it's made with more care. You definitely get really good service. I don't know what service is like now these days in the U.S., a fast food place, but you know, we talked about this before. Usually it's like some obasan behind the counter and maybe some younger kids that they're kind of like keeping an eye over or something. So everything is like, you know, working like a machine and everything and really quick. So yeah, I like to get the classic menu items like a double cheeseburger set meal or a Big Mac set meal.
Yeah, I was actually kind of doing some research about different menus around the world. And kind of just by coincidence on TV the other day, they had a program where they send like Japanese correspondents to all these different countries and testing out all the different menus that you can get at McDonald's. So for example, someone in the Philippines would get a Philippine specific dish from McDonald's, another one from Thailand, Vietnam, Europe or whatever, and compare all the ones compared to Japan. So I kind of found like this list of unique food items at McDonald's around the world. And I was wondering if you can guess what countries these dishes could be from.
You're going to tell me the dish?
I'll tell you the dish and you guess the country. We'll start off easy. I'll give you an easy one. Okay. Poutine.
That must be our good friends up north, Russia.
Is that your answer?
Yeah, they don't have the poutine burger in Russia?
Oh man, I thought you might know this, considering they're like your real neighbors, like back at home.
The Canucks?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you never heard of that dish? It's like chips and gravy, and they called it poutine.
I did not know that dish. It's very close to some other word I know, but no.
Yeah, so that basically, poutine is, I'm just looking for it now. It's French fries in gravy and cheese curds. And that's what, you know, is a staple in Canada anyway, not just McDonald's, but McDonald's have also kind of jumped on board on that trend and have adopted that into their menu. Huh. So, yeah, that's what I thought you would definitely get, considering, yeah, you live so close to the country. But I don't know, you live in Michigan, right? How close is that to Canada?
45 minutes to the border.
All right. All right, let's like move on then.
I'm upset that they don't have that up in Russia because, well, he probably wouldn't allow that, having a burger named after him, especially like at a McDonald's American restaurant. Chain food.
True.
Food restaurant. Yeah. All right. Give me number two.
Okay. Let's give you, yeah, man, these are going to be pretty tough, I reckon. All right. No. Okay. Here's an easy one for you. Tomato and mozzarella turnovers.
Tomato and mozzarella turnovers.
Yeah.
This is really in McDonald's?
Yeah.
Huh.
One of the words is a big hint.
Yeah, well, don't tell me. I'm going to go with Italia.
Italia, that's the one. But also, yeah, there's another dish not in Italy, but another one that's called a McChicken mozzarella, but it's not from Italy. Where do you think this one's from? And I'll tell you what it's got in it. It's got it's a McDonald's chicken sandwich with mozzarella sticks on top. What country do you think that's from?
Ooh, mozzarella on top.
Yeah.
I'm thinking France, but for some reason I want to say Greece.
Not anywhere near. It's Korea.
Really?
Yeah.
Big mozzarella cheese stick fans in Korea.
Doesn't really make much sense, right? But yeah. For example, for some reason, the Koreans like their mozzarella sticks. Okay. Let's go for this one then. Chicken, it's called a chicken McDow with spaghetti.
Chicken McDow?
Yeah, with spaghetti. What country do you think that is from?
That one's not Italy.
No, it's definitely not Italy. We've done Italy. Moving on.
Chicken McDow?
Chicken McDow with spaghetti.
Which continent?
The continent is, it's closest to us.
Where we are now?
Yeah.
Maybe down south or at the top of the world, depending on what your viewpoint is.
It's pretty hot there. It's pretty hot there.
Australia?
No, it is the Philippines.
Philippines.
Yeah. So what it is, it's basically a plate with a piece of chicken, like a drumstick chicken, deep fried, more like KFC style. And then it comes with a side of spaghetti with some tomato sauce and cheese. And it also comes with the option of having fries or rice with it, if you want to have that, and a Coke.
Wow.
So yeah, the Philippines.
That is definitely a unique dish that I would never have imagined at McDonald's, but I'm doing horribly on your quiz. Are you purposely trying to do this? Are you trying to like beat down my quiz-taking confidence?
Yeah, I'm trying to make you feel bad from the last win.
Trying to attack the champion.
Even it out. Okay, I'll give you one more.
All right,
The name of it is called Ham and Egg Twisty Pasta.
Ham and Egg Twisty Pasta.
Yeah, and it's a bowl of macaroni with sausage and egg toppings with sweet corn. And the sausage is kind of like, you know, what you get with the McDonald's breakfasts, the sausage patty. And then the egg is, yeah, like you get in the Egg McMuffin and some sweet corn.
Wow, it's just
on top of some macaroni.
Bizarre thing to see on a menu. I don't know. Germany?
This one is Hong Kong. Yeah, random. All right, last one. Sweet corn.
Germany.
Come on, man, you haven't been watching the commercials?
McDonald's. Or, sorry, Japan.
Yeah. Japan. That's the new thing. Well, like, you know, they try and market it for children, right? There's that commercial where the kids are fighting over the sweet corn, tub of sweet corn. You know how they love it out here. They put it on everything. Ruin pizza and stuff.
Well, yeah, that's why when you said it, the one before, the Hong Kong dish, so I was kind of guessed, but I've never seen anything like that on the menu here. All I can say is for somebody who doesn't eat much McDonald's, you are now an expert or have been an expert for a long time, it sounds like. So,
what is your favorite fast food chain? Because I'm not a huge fan of McDonald's. I like their Big Macs, but if I could choose to eat fast food again on a regular basis, I think I would choose Burger King. I love their Whoppers. But yeah, so for me, it's Burger King. But the thing is, I don't really go to Burger King anymore. There's only like two in Hokkaido, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, Sapporo at least, yeah.
Yeah, so there's one in Otaru, and then the other one's in Shiroishi, which is a bit of a drive away. But yeah, I don't go there anymore because my wife, she kind of feels a bit sick after eating Burger King now. So she won't go there anymore. It's a bit sad for me because I have to go there solo, maybe ride my bike there or something. But yeah, I haven't been there for about a couple of years now as well because she can't eat it.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say what my favorite fast food. I mean, I would say something like In-N-Out. I mean, that was always really good when I was living in California, but that just kind of sounds like...
No, I'm what about in Japan now. In Japan, Doug.
Oh, a Japan favorite fast food place in Japan. Mm. Well, it used to be Subway, but now Subway's kind of like disappearing from Sapporo, at least. You know what? I'm going to not even like American fast food or overseas fast food place. I'm going to say like some Japanese restaurant. I would say, and you probably know my favorite Japanese fast food. I'm going to say Yoshinoya.
Mm, yeah. Japanese fast food is good, man. Like I don't know if it's healthier than Western fast food, but it feels like it is because a lot of time you get like a teishoku style with a side of rice and miso soup or some pickles. So that always makes it sound like it's a lot better for you. But I'm sure it probably just as bad. I mean, that's why it's fast food, right? All fast food is kind of not very good for you.
Yeah, I probably cook with a lot of salt and sugar and stuff that just kind of turns into all the wrong stuff to cause inflammation when it's in your body.
And but, that Yoshinoya meat, that can't be good for you, right? It's just like a cauldron of beef that they've imported from America real cheap because, you know, it sells for like $350 in a bowl.
And then just they dump so much stuff into that cauldron and sauces and stuff. But man, it tastes so good at either 12 p.m., right, when lunch break starts, or like 3 a.m. after a night at the clubs.
I would say, Yoshinoya might be my fast food, Japanese fast food of choice too. And maybe even Nakko. Nakko's a bit better, I think, because they got more options on their menu. You can get like a katsudon or udon, soba noodles, a lot of things. And you can even get a gyudon there, right? Get a gyudon bowl. Mm. So I think, yeah, Nakko kind of ticks more boxes for me. So that was the one I used to always go to. I go to Yoshinoya if I wanted a gyudon specifically. That's where I'd go. But Nakko just for the variety in the menu.
Well, you can't beat it. That was a big deep dive on McDonald's and fast food. I mean, the original thing we looked at was like this list of all these recommended Japanese dishes to eat in Japan. So in the course of that, kind of looking at that, you noticed the whole French fry saga. I kind of picked up one of my favorite foods on that very long list and did a bit of a deep dive on it. And any guesses what might be my favorite Japanese food? How well do you know your podcast co-host?
Man, that was a big list as well. And it was like a list of 50 foods there. Can you give me a hint of which, like what bracket it came in? Because I kind of read the list, but I can't remember everything exactly.
I don't know. I think it was near the top 10.
Probably. Oh, okay. Because yeah. I was looking kind of low down. all right. Well, it's got to be sukiyaki then or something, right?
Oh, very close. And that might be actually, that actually might be my favorite Japanese food. But this is very similar. Shabu shabu, you know, of course, yes. Shabu shabu. I always talk about this. But I learned a little bit more about it, reading up on it, and wanted to kind of see what you might know about shabu shabu. We only have a little bit of time left. Shabu shabu, for those that don't know, is thinly sliced meat that is briefly immersed in a simmering pot of stock called dashi to cook and then dipped in sauce as it's eaten. It was created in Japan in 1952. Some believe its origins lie with Chinese hot pot cooking.
Oh yeah, Ben, I just wanted to mention actually, yeah, the hot pot. Oh, sorry, no, finish your question first.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, so you mentioned about the Chinese hot pot. Yeah, so my family are from Hong Kong, and yeah, they're really into shabu shabu. They call it da bino. It's called da bino in Chinese. But yeah, I remember it got kind of popular a while back in England too. Like a lot of Chinese people eating it there, but it was nowhere near as good as how they do it here. All the food, all the meat was frozen, and that was considered good. I went back to England, and my cousin was like, "Oh, I'm going to take you to this shabu shabu place, a restaurant," and they just like brought out all this food, and all the meat was frozen. All the vegetables were kind of, you know, not presented very nicely, kind of a bit tactile. And I was quite disappointed. My cousin was trying to impress me. He was like, you know, you just come back from Japan, I'm going to show you how to do Japanese stuff. I don't know why people do that. Do you have that? Like when you go back home and your friends or your family want to take you to like a sushi restaurant or something?
No, but we always were trying to be careful because I know that does happen. So in the opposite way, we were always trying to like be careful. We had like overseas guests come to visit us at companies here to make sure they weren't eating like food from their home country, only done in Japan. So people like get annoyed by that.
Yeah. So yeah, it wasn't, I was very disappointed with that. So I continue with your,
What else I was going to say is, do you know why it's called shabu shabu?
Is it because of the sound that you're supposed to make when you swirl the meat, shabu shabu, and then eat it?
The shabu shabu. Man, that's what everybody thinks. That's even what I thought until I read this one article that is trying to convince me otherwise. This says the word shabu shabu originated from a very mundane sound, the sound of hand towels being washed. If you can believe that. The owner of a high-class family-run meat restaurant in Osaka was trying to think of a name for this new dish that would help the product become widely known. At that very moment, he overheard the shabu-shabu sound of someone washing hand towels in the background, and so the name was born. Do you think that's true? Is this true? We got to fact check this. Somebody fact check this. Is shabu shabu named because somebody's washing hand towels in the back of the restaurant?
I hope that's true. I want it to be true.
I mean, because, you know, everybody says like it's because of the, like you said, like dipping the meat in the water makes a shabu shabu sound and stuff. Because there's a lot of onomatopoeia words in Japanese.
Chinese whispers, man. You know.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what the truth is. Shabu shabu is mostly made with beef, pork, or chicken, but depending on the restaurant and the area, you may find horse, lamb, duck, or wild boar. Ben, your favorite type of shabu shabu meat?
I like lamb. We actually had a lamb shabu shabu the other night with some haksai, obviously a staple for the shabu shabu. With
Chinese
some,
cabbage,
Chinese cabbage. Some shiitake, some noodles. It's not shirataki, it's a different kind of noodle, but it's made from the same ingredient, different name. I can't really remember off the top of my head. Very nice. And then obviously some ponzu and some daikon to get the nice lemony taste.
Are you the kind of person who puts the noodles in at the very end of the shabu shabu meal, or do you usually do it?
You talking about the shimemen?
Yeah.
Like the udon and the ramen. Yeah, always at the end.
Closing noodles, yeah.
Always at the end, yeah, the closing time. Yeah, usually udon. Udon, maybe one pack between two of us. Otherwise, it's just too thinning. But yeah,
so for those that don't know, shabu shabu, just like you're describing, is cooked by putting all these meat vegetables in the dish, in the boiling water, the dashi, at early on, and then you kind of cook the meat once everything's... Or you dip the meat in after everything's nice, hot, and going there.
Man, it must be one of like the most healthiest meals you can have, right? There's no additives there. It's all like fresh ingredients. The only kind of condiments you're putting in there is dashi, which is really healthy, or the ponzu sauce on the side. So yeah, it's like super healthy, man. I could eat shabu shabu, like different kinds of it, probably every day if I could probably eat that every day.
Yeah, and when you're cooking the meat, a lot of the, well, if it's like fatty meat, a lot of the fatty meat or fat gets kind of cooked off and into the water and stuff. But yeah, it's definitely one of the healthiest dishes. And just like you're saying, a lot of people even say like you should try and use as little side sauce as possible, because the original taste of the ingredients is obviously in the nabe or the pot that you're cooking with usually. So you don't want to lose that with the two popular side, what's it called, sauces, just like you were saying, one pones, which is a citrus-based sauce, the other one gomadare, which is sesame-based sauce.
Mm.
And another very popular ingredient, but one of my worst enemies when it comes to shabu-shabu is tofu.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah. It's always so bloody hot, isn't it?
Hot and hard to get out with chopsticks.
Yeah, usually. Yeah. You always need a spoon. We always keep a spoon in the neck close by now for every time we put tofu in there. And also it depends what kind of tofu, because you can get the silky kind. Kinu, right, is the silky kind, or mormen, which, mm-hmm. Mormen, I think, I can't remember which way it goes around. But one of them is the more kind of stronger, stiffer one, more spongy. So it's easy. It doesn't break away so much. Usually that one is better to eat for nabes, but I think most people go for the other one, the silky one, for some reason. I remember my wife always putting that in. I'm like, why don't you put the other one in? It's way easier to eat. And she gave me some explanation, but I wasn't listening. So yeah, so shabu shabu is your favorite Japanese dish.
Well, it's up there now, but you mentioned sukiyaki, and I'm torn, and there's probably a few others out there too. But
well, on that list, I kind of, one that caught my eye was curry rice, and we were actually talking about this recently with my wife, and you know how, you know, curry rice is considered Japanese food, but it wasn't actually from Japan originally. And do you know where it's from, Berg?
Yeah, I think you've mentioned this before.
yeah, so I'm quite proud because, you know, being British, anything that's from Britain, I always like to brag about. So I was bragging about this to my wife, and she wouldn't believe me. For the life of me, she wouldn't believe me. And so, yeah, curry was introduced to Japan during the Meiji era, which was 1868 to 1912. And at that time, the Indian subcontinent was under British colonial rule. So Anglo-Indian officers of the Royal Navy brought curry powder to Japan. And that's where it was born. Now we don't have curry rice in England at all anymore, or Britain, but we just have like Indian curries.
Sorry, you said they brought it to Japan, or they brought it to India? The Navy people, British Navy, brought that, it.
Yeah, the Anglo-Indian officers of the Royal Navy brought the spice curry powder mix to Japan.
From India. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, right.
Yeah, so okay. Originally from India, but it was they were under British colonial rule. Yeah. So we'll take that one.
And then, so you were saying about.
And then, I said this all to my wife, explained this to her, and she thought I was joking the whole time. And even now, she won't believe me. She never believes me when I tell her how, you know, certain things come from Britain. She just never believes me. I think it's because of my smug face.
That and all the other stuff that you always lie about. there's a lot of people right now that are probably typing on their keyboards. Like, hey, this is another Ben explanation.
Yeah. Fact proof that, please.
So is this the Japanese food you're most proud of, or one of your favorite Japanese foods?
The one I'm most proud of, and it is one of my favorites too. You know, it's like a staple home dish. Very like a nice thick sauce, very easy to make, and everyone has their own kind of version of it, adding certain different ingredients to make it better. Usually with chicken, potatoes, carrots, and then a curry roux, which is the block of the curry flavored powder. Yeah, really, really easy to make. And a lot of kind of kids know how to make it too. It's like real simple. So I think a lot of Japanese people want to claim it as theirs, but sadly, Japanese people, it's not. It's ours.
That British rule still extends even to today. That food. Yeah, well, I love Japanese curry. I mean, it was one of my favorite foods growing up that my mom used to make when we were growing up in the U.S. And yeah, I came to Japan, all of a sudden it's everywhere. Not, even like curry restaurants, not just like super curry restaurants, but there's actually curry restaurants sometimes, different types of curry dishes and stuff.
Like so. Kokos, for example, right? They just specialize in that.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I think we are coming up to that time, Burke.
Yeah.
Why don't we mention one of our lovely sponsors? So I was thinking, we haven't mentioned this one for a while, the HokkaidoGuide.com.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a tourist information website, HokkaidoGuide.com, written by locals, for locals. It's been around for about 10 years now. Over 10 years, yeah. And it contains a lot of information, such as like accommodation, sightseeing, food, nightlife, shops, outdoors, entertainment. And yeah, you should go check out our website. They got some really cool pictures. I'm just looking now at the website.
Photography on that website is amazing.
Yeah, there's a really good picture of Kushiro National Park, Kushiro Shitsugen National Park, on their main page. The photo is very impressive. And yeah, so check out the website for anything you want to know about Hokkaido. And if you just want to look at pictures of food as well, I highly recommend it.
Good travel information, good food information, good historical information. Still constantly getting updated with new articles because there's always new things to explore all throughout this great prefecture. So
offered in English and Thai. And if you want to advertise anything, yeah, there's advertising space available too. So please check out the website, HokkaidoGuide.com, if you're visiting this amazing prefecture we now call home.
Awesome.
Yeah, anything else to mention, Burke, before we say goodbye?
Well, you know, I am very happy that I finally made it out snowboarding, but I hope you and I can at least make it to the mountain once. I actually waxed my board this time. I don't think I waxed it last time I went, so I can probably keep up with you and have a lot more fun. I will say I was pretty surprised how much I was still able to do even after not being on the mountain very often. So
it's like riding a bike, right? It's like
exactly. That first run, getting your legs back under you and stuff is a little iffy, but then after that, kind of remember everything you used to do and everything, so.
Yeah, well, I'm going to head out tomorrow, actually. There should be some snow forecast for tonight, so I'm going to go ride tomorrow.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, because at the very beginning, you were like, yeah, I'm on spring break. I've got like 2 months off. You kind of passed over that really quickly, man. That's like everyone. That's a pretty sweet setup you got if you got like 2 months off.
There. Yeah, yeah. It's basically my shredding time. So February, March. Hopefully get down to dojo a bit more when I'm not snowboarding. And yeah, just preparing my classes for next semester.
Living the life.
Living it. Living it up.
Nice.
All right, everyone, if you enjoyed our podcast, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. I don't think you can do it on Spotify. I remember someone mentioning that, that they couldn't do that. So, yeah, please do that on Apple Podcasts. There's some algorithm, don't know what it is, but it apparently helps with people finding our podcast, extending our listeners. And that would probably be the best way to support us, help us out, is leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts.
Would really appreciate it for sure.
All right. お疲れ様でした。
お疲れ様です。